The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined this fine Tuesday by Mr. Craig Dennis Carter. It is draft week, so we're going to be digging into our favorite quarterback and receiver prospects before wondering if there is a single running back worth getting excited, irregardless of landing spot, like someone who's just good enough that it won't matter, you know, kind of like the situation they land in. We will then break down some of this week's latest news, including Chris Carson versus Rashad Penny in Seattle and the supposed Kadarius trade chatter in New York, and also some of the supposed Darren Waller trade chatter in Las Vegas, which I don't even know if you could really classify it as trade chatter, but we're going to hit on that later. We will then end by taking a look at Denny's recent article profiling quarterbacks who target running backs in the receiving game. But first, Denny, people say irregardless isn't a word. I'm pretty sure they added it.
It's not a word. I can confirm.
No. It's a word. I had two different things to ask you about. I think I'm going to start. Denny, electric toothbrushes.
Yeah.
Do you use a real toothbrush or do you use an electric toothbrush?
I use a real toothbrush like a man. I'm kidding. But, you know, it's kidding everybody. But it really is. I don't like electric toothbrushes. I don't get them. Also, I cannot part with the money that is required to purchase one.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Denny, because my wife is an electric toothbrush zealot, but hers went like full zombie last week, where it just kept vibrating even when it wasn't being used.
Oh,
like you could just hear it, like first of like just like rattling everything, like rattling the windows off the hinges in the bathroom, and then we just like determined, you know, we had to like kill it with a stake, you know, kill it with fire or whatever. And like everywhere you put it in the house, it just would not stop shaking and like scaring everybody because it would turn on like random moment. Because like we couldn't like put it in the trash yet.
Oh no!
I didn't even want to put it in the garage. I thought it might create like eerie sounds in the garage. So it was finally banished to the basement couch, where it just shook for days.
Wait! You put the vibrating zombie electric toothbrush on the couch downstairs?
Yeah, I did, Denny. My kids are still pretty young. They don't really frequent it. That room just quite yet. They for some reason like to watch TV in our workout room.
Here's the thing about kids. They like to watch TV wherever they're not supposed to really watch it.
Of course. And Denny, you know, very bougie fact, I have a workout room. Did you know that?
I didn't. But congratulations, I guess.
A minute, 24 hours a day.
Obviously. Look at you. You're ripped.
Of course.
You can barely put on your shirt anymore.
I know. And look, there's no room at all to move in this shirt.
I'm podcasting with Derrick Henry.
Okay. Yeah, it's just clinging to me. I had to buy a new one, and Lord Almighty, are they expensive. I mean, there's now, of course, you know, it's 2022, so they're like hip indie electric toothbrushes, you know, at least marketed. So, but we popped for the full size, the Philips Sonicare, and it cost you more than one Ben Franklin. That's what I'll tell the people listening.
Yeah, well, you can always finance it, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's on layaway at Kmart and Venture, many stores that still exist.
$40 a month for 18 months, and it's all yours, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy peasy. I don't use my wife uses one. She's tried to get me to convert. I've said no.
Yeah, wives are huge fans of electric toothbrushes.
Huge.
I've noticed.
Huge. I it makes you wonder, you know, who's paying them to promote it.
Well, but I think what it actually shows is that wives just actually listen to good advice. It's like the dentist is like, well, obviously just get an electric toothbrush.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my wife's like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know about this. I'm like, well, hold on a second. I've been using my bristle brush since the Great Depression and I'm not switching.
Right. It's really like a men would rather situation.
It is. Yeah. It's
men would rather brush their teeth inefficiently than go to therapy.
It's huge. Men would rather energy.
But hey, here's the thing. I bought a charcoal toothbrush recently. Have you heard about these?
So is that one of the electric ones? Like the hipster one?
No. It's a regular bristle thing and manual, I guess. And yeah, it's charcoal. It's supposed to make your teeth a little whiter. I don't know.
What does that even mean, charcoal? I mean, I know what charcoal is, but what does that mean with regards to a toothbrush?
I don't know. I don't know. And actually, my wife was kind of concerned about it. She said, are you sure you want to put charcoal in your mouth? I said, well, you know, not particularly, but I do want slightly whiter teeth, so we'll go for it.
I've noticed charcoal has become a real big marketing buzzword.
Yeah.
I think I briefly was using like charcoal shampoo. And
yes.
So then my wife would come in, you know, grill turkey burgers on my head, on my scalp while I showered.
Which is rude. It's
very rude.
But it was
efficient, but I mean, come on.
Yeah. So I have charcoal in my mouth every morning, is what I'm saying.
Wow. Yeah, that seems let's go to like a Anthony Fauci town hall and ask him about that. Should Denny be brushing his teeth with charcoal, Dr. Fauci? And they're like, how did you get on this call? And then you're booted before you get the answer.
Politics. Come on.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, anyways. I don't know. Should we talk football now, I guess?
I guess.
I was going to talk about the supposed scuttlebutt that the Jaguars don't know who they're taking at number one. But I mean, they've known the number one pick since probably like January 18th or something. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I was like Trent Baalke just like watching Trayvon Walker cut-ups like every day on YouTube. And like me. You know, at Christian F, I think, is one of the big cut-up guys on YouTube. And Trent Baalke is just, like, on his account, like, every day. I have a very hard time believing they don't know who they're taking.
I believe it. I believe that Aiden Hutchinson's agent today, this morning, tweeted that it's Tuesday and nobody knows. And I believe that. I think the problem
is... You're a naive child.
I think the problem is having the number one pick in a bad draft class.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, this seems to only happen to the Jaguars, where they weren't number one in the infamous Eric Fisher draft, but they were number two in the infamous Luke Jokel draft.
Oof.
And they keep getting, these elite picks. Well, I guess the part of the problem is the Jags have an elite pick every single year.
Every year.
And so I guess despite the law of averages, they're going to have elite high draft picks in 9 quarterback years. But yeah, they are always, I mean, I guess except for last year, they got the gift wrap number one pick until Urban Meyer decided to take a private jet home 2 days after the team.
This is my issue with, I think just generally general managers, whether it's for bad teams or good teams, are just way too confident in their assessments. Like, yeah, last year was a slam dunk. Like, they obviously had to take Trevor Lawrence, but is he a slam dunk great NFL quarterback? Absolutely not. Like, it could be. You know, there's a downside there that we saw last year. I think it'll get better slightly, but are we talking about generational? Like, he was a lock for being generational. That no, that's no more.
I think he was the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. I do kind of buy into that. I mean, at least on paper, but we're seeing how on paper does not really. He had a real good game against the Colts or something in Week 18. So
yeah, he had a fadeaway touchdown pass, which was nice. I'm reminded of that about 3 times a day by Jaguars.
I know, boy, they are clinging to that. Like, yeah, they are clinging. Like, and Elon Musk is going to be like signal boosting all that now. The new owner of Twitter, I bet he's somehow a Jags fan. And like, yeah, I mean, has anyone seen
this bro?
Week 18,
Trevor Lawrence made 600 throws as a rookie. We found the one good one, and we're going to replay it over and over.
The top of my feed every time I sign on is somehow a GIF of, like, this throw from Week 18. Wow. Like, I guess if this is the only real change they're making to Twitter, I don't really mind, but it's kind of weird.
It was compared liberally to the catch from Joe Montana to Dwight Clark. in a game against the Colts in week 18. It's the same importance as far as game goes. I think it'll go down in history the same way. I think we'll be talking about O'Shaughnessy or whoever caught that.
Yeah, you know? Trevor Lawrence's gloves from that throw, if he was wearing gloves, are now in Canton. I'll check it out when we're there this summer for the Fantasy Football Expo.
Yes, absolutely.
Sponsored by NBC Sports Edge. Indeed. Denny, no one would ever accuse you and I of being draft experts, but since this is, you know, our jobs, we aren't completely illiterate about the draft, and we are going to talk about the draft now. We haven't done a ton of draft talk on the show. They've been doing such a great job. On Mondays, the Matt Straub, Kyle Dvorak, Eric Froton, and company. But we'll begin with quarterback today, where one of the prospects we have consistently talked about this spring is Liberty's Malik Willis. And this, is he still the quarterback prospect we're the most excited about? Has anything changed in this pre-draft process for you, either seeing or hearing things you don't love about Malik, or just having someone else kind of creep up your board, so to speak? Or are we still all in on Malik Willis as our favorite quarterback prospect in this draft?
Well, 2 days before the draft, I'm still looking for my board. It's somewhere in my office. We're gonna keep looking.
This is the lawyers. You are required as part of your remain with NBC agreement. I can't think of a cool legal word.
We are to have a big board. We're searching every day now. But you know, it's Malik, and part of my excitement about Willis is that it's clear, you know, judging from, I know, anonymous QB coaches in the NFL and offensive coordinators, general managers, scouts, everybody, they're in agreement that whoever is going to take him is going to have to change their offense, having to cater their offense to his strengths, right? So like we saw Nick Sirianni do in Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts. So he tried to force the Hurts into a sort of traditional pass-heavy, you know, approach on offense, didn't work, pulled the plug, went super run heavy, and Jalen Hurts became the number one quarterback in all of fantasy and was on his way to being the overall quarterback one on barring that injury late in the season to his ankle. So I think Willis is in a similar spot. And you know, this talk about like, oh, he's so raw. I think that's a little bit overstated. You know, when you look at a completion rate over expected for quarterbacks in this class.
C-Po,
as the kids are calling it. And he's only behind Kenny Pickett. It's not like Pickett and Corral and Ritter and everybody. And then Willis is at the bottom by a long shot. Like he's a decent thrower. He also has an enormously strong arm that has been comped to Josh Allen. That's not bad.
He's a decent. Yeah. So the arm strength is off the charts, obviously, but so like the whole pre-draft process, I was basically just focusing on, you know, dual threat good for fantasy and the nomenclature of today. But you know, I finally did dig in to the cut-ups, which is the best way to evaluate draft prospects, is to watch several YouTube videos on them, you know, 10 to 12 minute YouTube cut-ups. But I have been doing that. And so like Josh Allen, he certainly looks like he's going to be like a 50% passer early in his career.
Right.
Like a lot to do in the accuracy department. So, you know, he's the dual threat. He's smaller. That could draw Michael Vick comparisons. But like the Michael Vick comparison I see with him is like kind of like a weird hitch in this like throwing motion.
I've seen the same.
That I was not in love with. Like, nowhere near the level. He's a good runner, but nowhere near a Vickian level runner. And also not a Lamar Jackson level runner. He'd be an elite dual threat runner for a court. He'd be like a better dual threat than Kyler Murray. Not as good of a dual threat as Josh Allen because he lacks Josh Allen's size, but he's got that weird throwing motion hitch. But yeah, he'd be one of the two or three best dual threats in the NFL from a rushing perspective. He has like shockingly easy arm strength, but he looks like an even rawer and of course much smaller Josh Allen. It's still a profile worth taking a chance on.
Right.
But after I finally did like dig into it, I'm like, yeah, okay, it makes sense that this guy's a divisive prospect and not considered like anywhere near a lock to be like a top five pick, top 10 pick.
I think in a more normalized draft class that has like clear cut top guys, and especially at quarterback, I think Willis would be like a really intriguing late first round or early second round pick. Of course, this class not being the best, he's being catapulted into the top 10, right? I mean, you know, that's
probably
that's where we're looking. He could go as early as two to the Lions if the Lions do if the Lions, you know, actually do something to improve their team. So in this draft. Now, Willis is small in that he's not 6'5". What is he, 6'1"?
He's like 6'1", I think. What do they say? He's 6'1", wet or something. I think they put their weight that they use that joke, of course.
But right, 6'1" on his.
He's not very tall. He might be like 6' even,
but
in reality.
But okay, and here's a film term I'll throw at you. Malik Willis is thick.
He is. He is very thick. He's 6' even and a half.
Okay, like
he's 2 bills and 19.
So okay, he's big. But he's not wiry and lanky Lamar Jackson.
No.
You know, he's built more like Jalen Hurts, I think. I know Hurts is taller, but as far as like the thick build, that matters. That, you know, I think of Russell Wilson being small, you know, by height, but being a thick boy and you know, running in early in his career, very difficult to take down, you know, avoided hits well, but also absorbed them well. I think Malik Willis can be an effective runner despite the lack of size.
Yeah, he is the kind of quarterback prospect where we're going to be reading like lots of very dubious scout quotes about like his rump or behind. Like, you got to love a quarterback with that kind of rump.
Oh, like, for sure. Yeah. Oh, also, you know, I'm gonna have to do an adjust the rank segment the first time whoever drafts him tweets out a picture of his butt in training camp.
It's gonna be all summer long.
And say it's the Falcons or whatever, and they post a picture with just the peach emoji or something, you know. I'm gonna have to do adjust. Oh, dear.
We will have to adjust there. And I had one. I think you made a really good point about Malik Willis, where any draft he would be drawing some first round buzz, but you are correct. If this were like a normal quarterback draft, he would have been in like the Lamar Jackson, Teddy Bridgewater zone, where like someone might try to sneak in and get this guy at number 32.
Yeah.
So they get the fifth year team option, and he wouldn't be getting any blue chip hype whatsoever. He'd be getting all like upside hype.
Yes.
And that's just not a luxury.
And, also, I mean, in that scenario, he would be very unlikely to play, or not very, less likely to play, if he were a late first, early second round pick. But if somebody's spending top 10 draft capital on him, there will be so much pressure to play him, especially because he's going to be on a crappy team that eventually is going to see, no, you know, why are we not playing him? There's no choice at some point.
There will be a lot. I will say, I think if the Lions did the kind of unthinkable and took him at number 2, that they probably would actually sit him for a little bit. Dan Campbell made it pretty clear that he has not loved Jared Goff, but I think – I think everyone knows Malik Willis that, I mean, his dude played at Liberty. Like, it's not going to be like probably a great situation if you're throwing him out there week one. Like, he's going to need time. And like, the pendulum has kind of swung back where quarterbacks are sitting a lot as rookies again. Like, the past 3 or 4 years, it's become a trend again. Like, we kind of went through that in like the late, what the heck do you call the first decade of this century?
The late aughts.
The aughts. And like early teens were, quarterbacks just straight up stopped sitting as rookies. They sit again. And I think even if he went as high as number 2, he would sit again.
I could see them working him in into some like short packages and things. But yeah, I mean, you're probably right. And Campbell, for as much as we praise him, as I praise him as an analytics focused guy, I will say that he strikes me as the kind of old school coach who would say, you're a rookie, you're sitting. I do think there would be eventually a scenario where he would have to play. Look, all I'm interested in is having Malik Willis available for preseason DFS. Let's do that.
I also think if the Lions take Willis, they won't have immediate self-loathing for the pick the way the 49ers did last year. And they will actually like have a Willis package, like you say. He never, Kyle Shanahan never even committed like the Trey Lance package bit. They'd be like, oh, he hurt his pinky and he can't throw for a month now.
Well, Shanahan, they were doing that in the preseason. I believe even early in the regular season, they were throwing out Lance for certain packages. And eventually Shanahan said, look, this is too difficult on the team. Like I can't ask these guys to like shift the philosophy of the offense every other play. So we're not going to do that anymore. And he, you know, to his credit, he did stick with that because we didn't see Trey Lance, you know, hardly ever, except for that one game against the Texans.
Yeah, he doesn't have a Jimmy Buffett pirate philosopher heart like Sean Payton, who just was going to derail the offense no matter what.
No matter
every chance he got.
Yeah.
With our friend, our dear friend, Taysom Hill. Denny's friend. Denny loves Taysom Hill.
Well, you know, you did.
You became the opposite of a hater. You were a Taysom Hill lover.
I enjoy a guy who can score 15 fantasy points in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, that is nice. Are there any other quarterback prospects that you're excited about or no? I mean, the answer can be no. Like, do you know enough to even like have an excited opinion on any of these guys? Or
I am interested in Ritter, just from a, you know, I think that there is some, you know, some viability for him as a dual threat, as someone who can produce on the ground, especially early in his career, if he's, you know, not going to be able to sit back there and read a defense, you know, maybe take off and garner and generate some, fantasy points that way. And you know, from what I've read in The Athletic and other publications, we could see him go like shockingly high on Thursday, to the point where, like I just said about Willis, he might be the team might be forced into playing him earlier than we think.
Yeah, Ritter in a normal draft would be like the quintessential, like we are trading back into the first round to take this guy in the final three or four picks. And that could still be what ends up happening with him, or he could just not even go in the first round. But yeah, I agree. It's starting to seem more likely that someone's going to take him like shockingly high, quote unquote, and we're just not going to get that number 32 quarterback this year.
You can't quantify these things headed into the you know, draft, first round of the draft, but you can say that there's a certain amount of buzz and just enough talk online, especially where you say, oh man, like this is like all I'm hearing is about Desmond Ritter maybe sneaking to this team. Maybe this team wants him bad enough to trade up. Like, you know, you're hearing that enough, and there are enough quarterback hungry teams out there, I think, who would go for something like that.
People are saying, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. It's tough.
People were saying about Ryan Nassib 1 year, I'll also say.
Is it Nassib or Nassib?
I think it is Nassib, actually. I always wanted to say Nassib because that would be a far more sensible way to pronounce it.
Did he go to the Giants?
He did. He was rumored to go to the Giants in the first round, and then he went in like the fourth round to the Giants. My final quarterback thought is I would much, much rather take a first round shot on Matt Corral over Kenny Pickett. And we were talking recently, like Kenny Pickett basically seems like Mac Jones, like even less upside, like maybe even more of a finished product. Like doesn't have Mac Jones' size either. Yeah. And like everything Corral does is like smoother and faster. He's a better athlete with a better arm. I think when I watch Kenny Pickett, I see like way too much of like the replacement level Kirk Cousins, like way too much like Jimmy Garoppolo, or like he's got like a good release, but like there's just not much drive on the ball. I do not like the poor guy. I mean, I just don't like Kenny Pickett as a prospect, and would much rather, if I'm going to take like a moonshot, or I would much rather take it on Matt Corral than Kenny Pickett.
Absolutely. I agree with that. The Athletic's Bruce Feldman had, you know, interviews with multiple anonymous coaches in the NFL, and all of them to a T said, Pickett is fine. We know his ceiling because he's at his ceiling.
Yes.
And there's nothing really more to dig for here. So we know what we're getting. We don't know what we're getting with Malik Willis. We don't really know with Corral. We certainly don't know with Ritter. So at least there's that, at least they feel, at least these coaches and scouts, they feel like they know Kenny Pickett's upside and it's not there.
Maybe he'll fall into the Derek Carr zone early day two and just fall out of day one. It seems unlikely, but because there's, you know, some people want a finished product. Like they don't want the projection.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Steelers profile as a team,
the Saints seem to be all over him.
Them too. But the Steelers reportedly have more interest in Pickett than Willis. And that doesn't shock me. You know,
I think it's actually the Steelers just finally trying to smoke screen after doing the worst possible job ever of hiding their interest in Malik Willis, as they did with Najee Harris last year. Like the Steelers are like, well, probably it might be good if everyone doesn't know who we want to take by January 3rd this year.
Wow. Oh yeah. Right. With like, oh yeah, Najee Harris. God, that was the weirdest thing.
Well, like it was the same thing happened with Malik Willis. It was like the Steelers have a leaky front office, it seems. And like, everyone knows their pick from like the second the season is over.
They're just so old school. Like they, you know, they don't try to do anything fancy. They're just like, yep, we want a running back, so we're going to take the top running back.
Yeah,
and that's that. All right, we're going golfing.
And I was trying to think of who the Steelers quarterback is right now. And man, I had an internal laugh remembering it, who it is.
It's
you should look it up, folks. Don't even say it on air. I want people to look it up.
Don't even say it.
I want people, because it's like a nice little Easter egg every time you remember that
Mitchell Trubisky
is the Steelers quarterback.
If you're listening to this show in late April, you're a sicko who has known Trubisky is the Steelers quarterback for 2 months now.
I don't, even the sickos forget stuff like that. I mean, we're very sick, and I mean, I remembered, but yeah, it's just
Mitchell Trubisky,
Steelers quarterback, and it's pretty funny.
One of the funniest things I've been reading, especially on news shifts, is Steelers beat writers saying, "Well, you know, if you get Pickett, what do you do?" Or whoever, you know, what do you do with Mason Rudolph? What do you mean? What do you do with Mason Rudolph? You cut him. It doesn't matter. Who cares?
Thank him for his service.
They say, what can you get for him in a trade? You can get nothing.
Quite literally nothing.
That's what you can get. Nothing. And you're going to like it. Exactly. You know, and you, who in the Pittsburgh media thinks that Mason Rudolph was the heir apparent? Like, he got his chances over and over and over again. And he's clearly at best, a career backup.
Steelers media is kind of clubby like that, where like they have a hard time seeing past the team spin sometimes. Yeah. And yeah, just not observing with their eyes. Like, oh, hold on a second. Mason Rudolph is god awful. And has been
horrible. That game against the Lions last year was one of the worst quarterback performances in recent history.
The only time he's ever good, this is unscientific, is when the Steelers are resting their starters in the final game of the season and the Browns desperately need to win in the final game of the season. Yeah. Mason Rudolph's been pretty good in that scenario.
You're right. He throws for 120 yards and 3 touchdowns.
No, he had one game where they seriously played their B team and the Browns had to win, and he had like the best game of his career.
Yeah, I think I had some DFS nightmares over that one.
Yeah, probably tried to block it out. Denny, at wide receiver, you and I were both blown away by Alabama's Jameson Williams, whose only red flag is that he is recovering from a torn ACL, you know, that little detail.
Yeah.
And had he not torn that ACL, by the way, Alabama probably would have won the national championship game. No offense, Georgia Bulldogs fans, but the complexion of that game. Denny, you watched the whole national championship game, right? You love college football, especially games that end at like 12:45 Eastern.
I did watch that game, and much to my chagrin, and it was horrible, actually. Yeah.
So is Jameson Williams the receiver you think we should be most excited about long-term in fantasy, or is he just the player whose traits we're most excited about?
That's a good way to phrase it, because I think the traits are what excite me. We had a blurb the other day about, you know, his speed and his, you know, after the catch speed being similar to Tyreek Hill's, like that's the sort of thing that catches your attention. And he is just unbelievable, blazing fast with the ball in his hands. 19 and a half yards per reception before his injury. That was the highest in the nation for wide receivers who saw at least 50 targets. So, I'm excited, but I keep hearing New York, he's going to the Jets. I keep hearing the Jets are not going to let him fall past them. But that's not good. I feel like I'm not so excited that I'm going to say wherever he lands, I'm in, because Zach Wilson was that bad last year.
And yeah, he was a one-year wonder too. And you don't want a one-year wonder ending up with the New York Jets. Like, how he was a one-year wonder, I don't really understand. I don't understand how Ohio State. So he was an Ohio State transfer, I believe.
Yes,
he was. I don't understand how that happened. I mean, Ohio State is like receiver U right now.
Yeah, but
still seems like maybe they could have found a way to use this guy who, when I see Jameson Williams play, I mean, even I was just watching him play, you know, as a casual college football fan last fall, like from like a size and like speed perspective, I feel like he's like a missing, he's like the common ground between like Julio Jones and Tyreek Hill, and like truly not trying to compare his skill set to those two, but like he's bigger than Tyreek. He's not as big as Julio, but he's got a little bit of Tyreek's game, and he's got a little bit of like Julio's kind of like power game, I feel like.
Right.
Maybe he does. Maybe I just like projecting that because he's rocked up. But like, he seems like kind of like a missing link between those two to me, and just like accelerates off the screen, basically. And he's just the guy where you watch him, you're like, wow, like this guy is just amazing.
It's I believe that the Tyreek comp holds water when you see him in the open field catch a ball, and he eviscerates angles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
like
that's
like,
a good way to put it.
You know, like cornerbacks and safeties, if you're watching his cutups, they have angles. They have great angles to catch him, and they don't. And sometimes they don't even come close. And that's something you don't really see all that often, whether it's college or the NFL.
No, that's a really good. Yeah, that's a really good point. You don't even see it in college that often.
Right.
It's not, especially with Jameson Williams. I mean, I know it's college. He's playing in the SEC. Like a lot of these guys are 5-star recruits who know how to take an angle on a receiver. And like you said, he just embarrasses them.
There are times when he you see the angle and you go, okay, well, this play's over. Like it's a good gain. It's a 30-yard gain or whatever. And then bang, he's gone. You know.
You know what else is embarrassing is that Jameson Williams is yet another product of the city of St. Louis, Missouri, who did not even consider the University of Missouri. And
Elijah Drinkwitz, we have to fix this, okay?
We have to fix this.
They're listening.
Oh yeah, Elijah, if you're listening, we got to fix this. We're doing good work this offseason, but we got to fix this. And I lost my train of thought now when I was shouting out Elijah Drinkwitz.
We're just talking about Jameson Williams mostly.
Yeah. I mean, who? Any other receivers that get us as excited as James? It's a very good receiver class. I mean, a lot of different kind of skill sets too. Like some dudes like Drake London kind of like reminds me of like Darren Waller, which, you know, isn't the best thing since he is a wide receiver, but there's a lot of varied skill sets in the receiver class. Is anyone else that really excites you, or are we all in on Jameson Williams?
Nobody to the extent of Jameson Williams. I will say that I've seen enough Drake London slander over the past 2 weeks to make me really question his bona fides as a future wide receiver one for whatever team he goes to.
Yeah, I mean, he plays big, but he's a guy, he's just like the classic, it's not good when you're entering the NFL and it's already clear you're going to have to be a guy that like wins in close quarters, basically.
Yes, right.
Like game, and some people make a career of that, but it's a much lower margin for error path for your star NFL career to be a guy who like wins hand fights and like goes over the top of people constantly.
Right.
This seems definitely like what Drake London's going to have to do.
I will say Hayden Winks of Underdog Fantasy had a good point about London, which is that he was used quite often on screens near the line of scrimmage.
Almost constantly.
And right. And so he, you know, that, you know, really skews the numbers and the you know, kind of creates some uncertainty as to where the belief that he can't separate comes from. Is it from that sort of usage where, you know, you're not separating if you're not leaving the line of scrimmage and you're catching the ball? That could be a kind of an overlooked factor heading into the draft.
I will say, I mean, again, this is, I feel like it's not good when you're having to like explain a receiver's skills this way, but he does kind of remind me as like a good rebounder in basketball where like he knows how to position himself in like tight quarters. Like he does seem to have kind of an uncanny understanding of like the space on the field and where to position himself. And he does seem really good at that. But yeah, Drake London just strikes me as you got to be so confident that he's going to be able to like make this narrow path to success work.
Right.
And it just doesn't usually work out. I'll say I'm over the moon about Treylon Burks. And maybe it's because every time he played Mizzou, he had like 172 yards. But he reminded me, it's not just because he was at Arkansas. When I was watching him, I was like, this guy reminds me of somebody. And I realized that it was Darren McFadden. And which, again, not always the best when you're comparing a receiver to a running back. But he's just like, he is like so smooth and fast for like his size. Like he's sudden, as scouts were saying for like a year or two. I think they've already like given up on that buzzword. But just like Darren McFadden, there's so much speed and like fluidity for his side. I mean, Darren McFadden came kind of downhill in the NFL, actually, where he wasn't known as a side-to-side mover.
Yeah.
But just like, I feel like very instant, very sudden for Treylon Burks, and he's so big. But he's got like some pretty legit receiving skills too. And he was like the kind of guy, much, much more than Drake London, of like the questionable, like kind of like day one receiver prospects that I want my team to take a chance on. Because I just think like he's a nasty, nasty size speed prospect.
It feels like the NFL is shifting more toward, you know, a future where every receiver will be 6'1", 180 pounds.
It's true.
And so you wonder about these guys coming out now who are enormous, who kind of fit the mold of like a Mike Evans. And I think Mike Evans might be like the last of his kind in a way of this guy, dominant 1,000 yards every season, dominant red zone guy like that. I just feel like the future of the NFL is not that. It's more Jameson Williams. It's more these guys who are much smaller and incredibly fast. You know, that's the key point.
You just sound like someone like mourning the death of the British Empire to me.
I listen, back in the day, I was team big wide receiver. I thought that was the way to build a team from both a real football and fantasy football standpoint. It's not like we didn't lose the battle. We lost the war, man.
Yeah.
Teams have, you know, very little interest in establishing an offense, creating an offense that caters to like the big man on the outside anymore. That's not it.
I will say, I mean, we might have begun to see the the NFL is nothing but a series of revolutions and counter revolutions.
Yeah, right.
And as we saw teams like putting the clamps on the Tyreek Hill type stuff last season, maybe we'll move like, well, we're just have to like beat these people up with big receivers again. And like, if they're going to go over the top and contain our speed, maybe we just have to start beating people up with big receivers again.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what the Patriots are trying to do.
That's
right?
Definitely what the Patriots are trying to do.
I mean, let's see if it works, Cotton.
Say best of luck. Strategy. Yeah. Yeah. Best of luck. It's a real bold strategy. Yeah.
I don't love it. I don't love signing Devontae Parker. I don't love paying trillions of dollars to Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, but we'll see how it goes.
We will see how it goes, Cotton. And Danny, I mean, do we have anything to say about the running backs? It's just,
sure.
It's the lowest wattage running back class in a really long time. And I tried to phrase this properly in the intro, but is there a single back who excites you, like independent of landing spot? Like it won't matter where they end up. Like you believe in the skills, or is this like just a totally context dependent running back class?
I think, you know, mostly it is. Yes, absolutely. Context dependent. I will say, and this might sound weird because of the pass catching aspect here, but I will say that if I had to name one guy who I would be excited about,
you had to name one running back in this class,
which I take no pleasure in knowing about a running back, but I do know about one, and his name is Kenneth Walker. He's out of Michigan State. Now I know that sounds strange because it's like independent. He doesn't catch passes. So like what is his upside? Well, our colleague Pat Corain, who has done great write-ups on tons of prospects from an analytical standpoint, and I can't get enough of it. I recommend everybody go to NBC Sports Edge and check those out. He's talked a lot about elusiveness as a key to determining who can make defenders miss tackles in the NFL rather than just, you know, getting what is blocked, you know, kind of like last year with Najee Harris. Pat Corain wrote this about Kenneth Walker recently. Among day one and two running backs, Walker's 2021 season is the best single season finish in elusiveness per game in the Pro Football Focus database. Okay. Leonard Fournette's freshman season and Dalvin Cook's sophomore season came in second and third, right behind Walker. Walker is a little less impressive from a career perspective, but still ranks in the 91st percentile in elusiveness. I do think that, you know, the likelihood is he becomes an early down guy who gets very little passing down work, just judging from his lack of production. He ran a lot of routes, by the way, at Michigan State. Was not targeted a lot and didn't do a lot.
13 balls. Yeah.
Didn't do a lot when he caught it. So we have questions, major questions, rightfully so, about that. Now, if he lands, I know we just talked about independent of a landing spot, but if he lands on a good team, on a team that generates a lot of positive game script, and is good for that early down role to be more dependable from a fantasy standpoint, I will be very excited.
He did put the team on his back. Like Michigan State really overachieved last year, and he was a big part of that. So yeah, I've been kind of buying in to the Kenneth Walker love myself. So Crane's, by the way, Crane is the guy you should be reading on this. So please,
yes.
We have a few days left for the draft. Go check. I mean, even check out after the draft. It's going to be highly valuable still. And he's going to have more stuff coming after the draft, but go check out Crane's work. Go check out Kyle's work too, team needs and stuff. Just, we have a lot of really valuable draft stuff if you've not hit it up yet. And Denny and I will be right back after this.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
It's draft week, and we have you covered. Thursday night after round one, we will be live on the NBC Sports Edge YouTube channel following the first 32 picks in Las Vegas. I, Patrick Daugherty, will join Matt Straub, Warren Sharp, and rotating analysts from our Edge team to break down all the big storylines from both a fantasy and betting perspective. The show will be available in the Bet the Edge and Good Football Show podcast feeds on Friday morning. Please check it out. We're really excited about it. Notice I didn't mention Denny in the promo, because Denny goes to bed at 7:45. Denny's actually going to miss the entire draft, right?
I will go to bed 1 minute before Roger Goodell names the first pick.
Yeah. sleep is very important.
I'm going to time it just right. I'm going to close my eyes just as he goes, the Jacksonville Jaguars select. I'm going to go, boop.
Yeah, Denny, I have bad news. You have to stay up for the entire draft. You don't have to do the podcast, but you do have to stay up the entire draft.
I will.
I haven't even told you that. I mean, I think you remember that. You have to work all night Thursday, all night Friday, and all day Saturday. So
I do remember. I do recall that.
Tell your wife's divorce attorneys when you'll be working this weekend. Denny, the New York Daily News's Pat Leonard created quite a stir last Friday when he reported the Giants were shopping 2021 first-rounder Kadarius Toney. Are we lending any credence to this, or do we just think this is more about a new brain trust trying to motivate Toney into attending what are supposedly voluntary OTAs?
Yeah, they're not voluntary. No. You know, like they, especially for a second year guy who missed a ton of time and had some issues.
Injured by like the wind in 2021. Yeah. They kind of wanted to show up at OTAs.
It was never voluntary for a guy like Kadarius Toney. I think that this was just a little bit of a temper tantrum from Brian Daboll and the new Giants staff, and saying, you know, this is unacceptable. And maybe they spread some rumors, some reports about, hey, you know, maybe we'll trade him. We don't know. They're not trading him. Okay. Like, he's on his rookie deal. He flashed to the extent that they would be in last year, to the extent that they would be insane to consider parting with him right now.
I mean, it would be selling like ludicrously low, like at a moment of like extreme weakness, they would get like probably at most like a third round pick. Like, maybe if teams had like called them about Kadarius Toney, but like, listen, you guys didn't draft this guy. You're interested in trading him for like a second round pick or something. But like, them like floating it themselves, like this, it just wouldn't work. Unless they like truly dislike the player and like are in like get whatever they can mode. But yeah, so the fantasy community, we probably overrated Kadarius Toney last year, but it was definitely an inconclusive see. It was not what you'd call a bad. Like, there's still a lot of upside here, and it would just be crazy. There certainly can't be in, like, get whatever they can territory for Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, I guess the best case scenario, for the Giants would have been some team jumping on that and being like, we'll give you a fifth rounder, you know, like, whatever. But
yeah, I mean, if they could trade with dynasty managers.
Yeah.
It would be all over it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm probably a little too excited about Kadarius Toney.
We saw Kadarius Toney make a jump cut once, and then you and I talked about him the rest of the year.
Come on. He dominated for three games.
He actually did.
in a terrible offense. God, yeah. Horrible. Anyway, I am excited. The one thing I do get a little bit freaked out by the fact that he seems not to endear himself to coaches and doesn't seem too interested in being like a pro's pro.
No, he's a unique personality. He's kind of out there. So
we're going to have to watch that.
Yeah. Well, our people are on it. We're watching it. The Seattle Times' Bob Condotta reported last Friday that it, quote unquote, remains unclear if or when Chris Carson and his neck injury might return in 2022. I know some people have been scooping up Carson in like best ball drafts and are still projecting him as the Seahawks starting running back. I mean, do we really think at this point he's going to be the lead back over Rashad Penny, who was the best running back in the NFL in December, got pretty good money from the Seahawks, you know, a team now that is going fully run based. Now they've finally gotten rid of Russell Wilson in Pete Carroll's eyes. Yeah. What is your evaluation of the situation, Carson versus Penny?
I don't see a scenario where I could draft Chris Carson right now in a best ball league. Like,
yeah, it's like, where would what is the value? Like, what is truly the upside?
What is the best case scenario? The best case scenario is that, like, he makes a miraculous week one start, but then there's issues with the neck and all sorts of other things that he's dealt with. Also in a horrible offense that really won't be able to run it as much as Pete Carroll wants to.
No,
man, I'm not excited about either of these guys. I'm pretty depressed about how the Seattle backfield shook out this offseason.
I'm excited, but anytime you, even if it's like a pretty small sample size, if you're like the best running back in the league for five or six games, like I am excited about Rashad Penny. It's, of course, hard to stay excited about Rashad Penny because he's been in the NFL 4 years and been healthy for like maybe two total months, like truly healthy. That's also where it comes in with Chris Carson. Rashad Penny has been healthy more recently. He's had a better stretch of football than Chris Carson ever had. And it's not just the neck with Chris Carson. I mean, Chris Carson, he's just such a violent runner where he was injury prone, quote unquote, even before the neck.
Yeah.
And it's just like the upside is just gone. Yeah, there's no path to upside with Chris Carson, where I still see a path to upside with Rashad Penny.
Yes, I absolutely agree. But the, you know, the Seattle backfield just holds so little fantasy intrigue for me, unless they do something wild in the draft or
my draft. Yeah, Desmond Ritter. So,
right. I mean, so it could get better, but at the moment I'm thinking that I don't want running backs lining up behind Drew Lock.
I just had the nightmare scenario of the Seahawks drafting Kenny Pickett and like the team, they would have to fold the franchise. I mean, no offense to Kenny Pickett, but also offense to Kenny Pickett. They have to fold the franchise if they draft you.
You know what they would do? They would yo-yo him in and out of the lineup with Drew Lock all year.
Yeah, well, he'd be there solely to push Drew Lock. Because Drew Lock is just, I mean, let's be real, he has so much untapped potential still, Denny.
You sound like I'm podcasting with Pete Carroll.
Yeah, you're podcasting with a Mizzou alum who did badly want Drew Lock to succeed. And now we'll fully admit to anyone who listened that he should never take another NFL snap. They gave it more than a college try in Denver.
They did.
And
didn't. Yeah, the Broncos wanted him to be a thing so bad.
Really bad.
And I mean, but did you see he knew the words to that rap song?
He was really good at that at Mizzou. He was a TikTok star before that was a thing.
It's great. Like I was enthused about his NFL prospects once I saw him on the bench, knowing the words to every song and dancing along. That's great. That's great. I think that'll pay off for him in the long run.
He was a talker before that was a thing. I don't even have a prompt prepared for that. I mean, Darren Waller. What's the deal with that? I mean,
what's the deal?
He was going to, what's the deal? Anyone following this? Anyone watching the Darren Waller? That was Jay Leno. Zoomers know who Jay Leno is.
No, they have no, they don't even know who Conan O'Brien is.
Hey, first of all, NBC, we're probably still paying both of them. So watch what you say.
You're right. and rightfully so.
So there was some scuttlebutt last night that the Packers were targeting him in a trade. Since we've begun this podcast, ESPN's Jeremy Fowler has reported there is zero chance he has traded.
Oh, well.
Any credence whatsoever, Darren Waller could be wearing a different uniform in 2022, Denny.
I mean, you have to believe that the Packers are on the death tilt about their pass-catching situation. It's bleak. I mean, really bleak. When you're looking at, Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard, guys who probably couldn't make like 10 teams in the league, like couldn't make the final roster. I don't understand what they're doing or like how Aaron Rodgers could be in such a bad situation this year that he just stops. They just stops playing.
Well, I think Aaron Rodgers, I'm not trying to slander him with this. Like, he's always been a hyper competitive individual, but he seemed like maybe he just decided, like, screw it, it's just time to play for the money, man. And like, I gotta, you know, like, this is the one thing I'm super good at. I gotta take home as much money as possible in my late 30s. And if I just don't care if we're competitive anymore.
Right.
Because like, that's basically the state of mind he has to take with this right. supporting cast.
It's really awful. Like, their whole offense was pitch and catch between him and Davante Adams. And you take one of those guys away and it doesn't work. You know, like I'm very confused. So anyway, yeah, they're going to have to try to land somebody, whether it's through the draft or via trade or something. They cannot go into the season with their current pass catching room or wide receiver room.
He might legit retire if they don't use a first round pick on one of their first round picks on a wide receiver.
They have to. They just have to.
Like, listen, Aaron Rodgers, he's become a political lightning rod. I mean, it would be a hostile act to not, even Aaron Rodgers deserves the receiver. It would be an overtly hostile act to not draft this man wide receiver.
We have a question in the chat from Jason Good about why is Amari Rodgers not being discussed here. According to several beat writers, the team was very disappointed in how Amari Rodgers operated in the offense and see him more as a special teamer than an every down wide receiver. Now, by default, he could get some snaps in the slot or whatever, but you know, they wouldn't have acquired Randall Cobb, I think, if they would have been comfortable with Amari Rodgers there.
Yeah, there was kind of like, seemed like instant buyer's remorse with Amari Rodgers last summer. And right, the signs were not good from the get-go. And he needs to have like the offseason of a lifetime. Receivers have quite frequently got off to slow career starts with Aaron Rodgers. Like, he's like Tom Brady, basically, where it's like as much about like telepathy as like your football skills sometimes. Like, they want that almost like blindfold level of chemistry. And that takes several years. But Amari Rodgers did not get off to a good start building that.
No.
Last season. We'll be right back to talk about Denny's article. It's NFL draft week, and everyone is trying to figure out who's going to be the number one pick on Thursday. Our partners at PointsBet have cooked up a contest that you won't find in any other sports book. The PointsBet Perfect 10, presented by Chris Sims. Why Perfect 10? Because that's exactly what you will need to be perfect in selecting picks 1 through 10 for the draft on Thursday evening. And if you're perfect, you can win $100,000 and free bets from PointsBet. Go to pointsbet.com for more info. Danny, I mean, you get the first 10 picks of the draft right every year, right?
Every year since 2007. So not forever, but yeah.
Yeah, you didn't. In 2007, you missed a few. But before that, you even did a few years even before 2007.
That's so right.
Danny, I don't know if the folks out there know this, but you literally never stop writing. Ever.
It's true.
You literally never stop writing. This week is an article on quarterbacks who target running backs in the passing game. I'll begin with, settle it once and for all, are running back targets a quarterback stat, Denny?
They seem to be, for the most part. And, you know, you look at the guys at the top here in their target share to running backs. You have Garoppolo, Stafford, Derek Carr, Mac Jones, Tom Brady. So, you know, these are guys who are not fleet of foot, as my kids say all the time.
It's a famously Zoomer phrase.
They love it. They love it.
They just go around saying fleet of foot all the time.
I think it's a band, actually, fleet of foot. But so I wrote up a few of the guys who jumped out here, including Derek Carr. And it's kind of a quarterback who targets running backs heavily is now being coached by a coach who targeted running backs heavily for years and years and years in New England. From 2017 to 2021, the Patriots under Josh McDaniels has the second highest running back target share in the league. Of course, this led to big seasons for James White. I'm sorry if you can hear my dog.
Yeah, he's a good boy.
He's a bad boy right now. James White had big season.
Then he's rolling up a newspaper underneath.
218 targets for James White from 2018 to 2019. That is a lot. You know, McDaniel's use of the screen game didn't change at all under with Mac Jones under center in 2021. The New England passing offense and its lack of clear-cut backfield pass catchers like White led to kind of a smattering of targets for Ramondre Stevenson and Brandon Bolden and Damian Harris. But the Patriots last season gained 10% of their passing yards on running back screens. That's the 11th highest rate in the league. I think the takeaway here is that Derek Carr could be, you know, peppering his running backs with targets. Now, who that's going to be, I don't know, because you have Kenyon Drake, you have Josh Jacobs.
It's never Josh Jacobs.
Well, it was once.
It kind of was finally.
He was running back 6 over the last month and a half of the season.
The only running back who mattered then was Rashad Penny, so no one even paid attention to that.
But Kenyon Drake is supposed to be healthy to start this season, so I guess we'll see. But they do. We should keep an eye on who's going to be catching those passes, operating in that pass catching role in the Vegas backfield, because it could be very valuable for PPR purposes.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs had several, I think, in the Darren Waller injury zone, like several, like 5 or 6 catch performances. And we've always known he had that skill set. I think he caught over 50 balls finally last year too. I mean, he's always had the skill set. Like you said, it could be like a perfect marriage of scheme and personnel between Josh McDaniels and Derek Carr for this. So yeah, keep an eye on Josh Jacobs, folks.
Yeah, and another guy I wrote about is Matt Ryan.
Well, read the header. Read the header from your article for the Matt Ryan section.
Matt Ryan, Cement Shoes, and Nyheim Hines.
There you go.
That's the header. But by the way, here's something I didn't expect. I logged on one morning, as you do, and I had a several tweet exchange with someone who was trying to convince me that Matt Ryan is indeed a mobile quarterback.
Elon Musk was doing this, but
borderline dual threat quarterback, Matt Ryan.
This actually did happen.
It did happen. You can look it up on.
I mean, he is maybe the least mobile quarterback of the past 5 years.
And so I couldn't figure out, because usually this comes up from a deranged fan, right? So I click on the profile and I look through and I'm like, okay, is this like, is his last name Ryan? Could it be Matt Ryan's family member? is he a Falcons fan? No, not a Falcons fan. Is he a Colts fan? No, not a Colts fan. You know what he is, though? He's a Boston College alum.
There you go.
And there it is. And that I found it. I felt like an investigator trying to seek out the truth. I found it. You love Boston College. You remember Matt Ryan there 20 years ago. And so you think that he's mobile. It's weird.
Yeah, BC fans, they don't have a lot to cling to either. I mean, they're just desperately waiting for A.J. Dillon to finally go off. Until then, they're going to be claiming Matt Ryan's a dual-threat quarterback.
So, you know, let's get real. Matt Ryan has generated some really good seasons for running backs via the passing game, including Devontae Freeman. He saw Freeman in 2019 had a 13% target share in 13 games. That came out to 70 targets or 5.4 per game. That's solid enough. Colts head coach Frank Reich and Chris Ballard, the GM in Indianapolis, said in late March that they want Nyheim Hines to be more involved in the pass game. Now, I know any coach with a pulse is going to say, we need running back B to be more involved in the passing game. I get it. But Hines has proven effective as a pass catcher. In 2020, he was the third in targets and receptions with Phillip Rivers throwing the ball. Phillip Rivers, of course, being famously not fleet of foot. Okay.
And he was also the guy that proved running back targets were a quarterback stat.
Oh, for sure.
Because it didn't matter who I've been just so pre-triggered by the Nyheim Hines stuff, because you know who also can catch passes is Jonathan Taylor.
I know.
And when Jonathan Taylor catches a pass, there's this decent, a non-0% chance he will score a 76-yard touchdown. When Nyheim Hines catches a pass, that is not a potential outcome.
You know, and they were working with a quarterback last year in Carson Wentz, who traditionally has not targeted running backs to a very low extent, 10% or so. Of his throws have been to running backs. So neither guy got much work, but weirdly, you know, they signed Nyheim Hines, the Colts do, to a pretty
big deal,
hefty extension right before the season. And then they have him run a route on 1/3 of their pass plays, whereas Jonathan Taylor was at about 39%. So I don't really know what the plan was there, but they seem re-energized about Nyheim Hines as a pass catcher in Matt Ryan's backfield.
Man, and just someday, even good front offices, just you just don't have a plan occasionally. And like, you know, immediately Chris Bauer's probably like, well, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I did. And so what are you going to do? You going to sue me? Yeah. I actually might sue him if they do it.
They really like Nyheim. I think that you know, there's something to be said for that. Like teams that fall in love with a player as a person and they say, okay, like it's time to pay you. And
there's something to be said for liking people.
Sure. Let's go. Let's go with that.
One final thought from your article, Denny.
Yes. Last thought is that, our guy, Mitchell Q. Trubisky III, possible Steelers week one starter, is among the guys who throw to running backs the most per the data. So he should be able to keep the Najee Harris target train chugging along this year after Harris led all running backs in fantasy points expected through the receiving game. I don't know how that happened, but it did. And it's a key component to his fantasy appeal. So I think Trubisky can keep that going.
I think so too. And yeah, I mean, there's not going to be any touch competition for Najee Harris. And there's some debate over how effective his rookie season truly was, but not much debate over how much he got the ball or how much he's going to get the ball this season, okay, especially with Ben Roethlisberger gone.
That's right.
So yeah, all systems go on Najee. All systems go on the end of this show. It's a very good show today. I mean, it's always a good show. But yeah, we have a lot of thoughts on draft prospects, actually.
I had more thoughts than I thought I had.
Yeah, we have a lot, but we're not draft dummies, but we're not draft experts. We have so many of those at NBCSportsEdge.com.
Yeah.
So please check it out this week because the content is not stopping between now and Thursday. There's so much good stuff already out there from Pat Corain, Kyle Dvorak, Eric Froton, the entire college side of our website. So please check it out. There's so much great stuff. Check us out on the website. Sit with us on the website Thursday evening. Listen to the podcast Thursday evening or, you know, when you're driving around this weekend. We're going to be logged on all weekend. So thank you so much for joining us today. Join us later this week. For Denny, I am Pat. We will talk to you later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.